live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. This is an Empowerment Hour. No guest today. But I will share the latest on health and healing and what's good for prostate cancer, brand new treatment. Also, an interesting article from the Saturday Evening Post. And it's entitled, The $14 Billion Question, Are Cholesterol Meds Worthless? And that's in the current issue. And that's an investigation by the Saturday Evening Post. And I'll give you their opinion, then share mine. From our environmental section today, from David Suzuki, Environmentalism Has Failed. Biocentric View is Needed, from his website. So we will read that. And then also from our environmental section, our country is being fracked by the merger of government and big business, from Washington's blog. So I'll share that as well. But most of today's program is going to be taken up with the issues that you find important. This is your opportunity to deal with any issue, any question, any thoughts, any challenges. There is no censorship on this program. We invite people to share their points of view. As long as we can learn something from it, we all benefit. So our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We'll be joined with your questions from Luann Panessi in about 15 minutes. I won't be taking calls before then, but after that time I will. Let's begin. There's something from the University of Chicago Medical Center that they have found that is interesting and something really original. Beehive extract shows potential as prostate cancer treatment. Let me quote this. An over-the-counter natural remedy derived from honeybee hives arrests the growth of prostate cancer cells and tumors in mice, according to this new research paper from the University of Chicago Medicine. Caffeic acid, which is a phenethyl ester, or what's called CAPE, C-A-P-E, it's a compound isolated from the honeybee hives, bee propolis, and the resin that's used by bees to patch up holes in the hive. Propolis has been used for centuries as a natural remedy for conditions ranging from sore throats and allergies to burns and cancer. But the compound has never gained acceptance in the clinic due to scientific questions about its effect on cells. In a paper published in Cancer Prevention Research, a major peer-reviewed journal, researchers combined traditional cancer research methods with cutting-edge proteomics to find that this particular substance from bee propolis arrests early-stage prostate cancer by shutting down the tumor cell system of detecting sources of nutrition. Quote, if you feed CAPE to mice daily, their tumors will stop growing. After several weeks, if you stop the treatment, the tumors will begin to grow again at the original pace. That's according to Dr. Richard Jones, assistant professor in the Ben May Department of Cancer Research and Institute of Genomics and Systems Biology. So it doesn't kill the cancer, but it basically will indefinitely stop prostate cancer proliferation. Now, why is this important? Because how many times have you heard people call up on this radio program and say, Gary, I'm 55 years old and I was fine, I was healthy, and then started this excessive urination and burning when I urinated, and I started having a little lower back pain about the mid of my back, and I couldn't figure it out, went to the doctor, and finally I got a diagnosis, and first they said my PSA was high, and then they said, oh, you got an enlarged prostate, or maybe prostate cancer. I would have then talked about the prostate, and I would have talked about the prostate in ways that most people have not heard. First, I would describe it as about the size of a walnut. And it's at the base of the bladder that encircles the urethra. Now, we all know that the urethra is where urine comes out of the body. And the prostate's primary job is to produce prostatic fluid, which makes up the bulk of male ejaculate and nourishes and transports the sperm. In effect, it's the energy of life, and the primary energy that creates life. Now, just on a biochemical level, it contains all this, but I would look at it differently. I would also say that beyond the biochemical, when you have something that you're able to create life with, after all, if you exchange saliva, that doesn't create life. Stares, shaking hands, hugging, doesn't create life. The sperm does. That means it has an essential energy. So that essential energy should be analyzed on more than just what's in it. How many sperm are in it? Are they deformed? What rate they're traveling? And realize that this is one of the highest vibrational issues. If you measured blood, saliva, urine, sweat, and tears, and sperm has the highest vibrational level. Now that tells you a lot. It also tells you a lot if you're practicing Tantra, if you're practicing the Kundalini, or you're controlling the ejaculate, either releasing it or not, and what that does to the rest of the body's energy and your first chakra. But I won't get into that because that's a separate issue, and it's a little more esoteric. But we do know that that's the reason you have a prostate. And without that prostate, then you're not going to be able to have the prostatic fluid. Then we end up with an enlarged prostate, but before you get an enlarged prostate, you have an inflamed prostate. And the inflammation from things that we don't consider at all. Hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, pizza, beer, alcohol, caffeine. We don't think of those as being inflammatory agents, but they are. They're highly acidic. And in a highly acid medium, the prostate is extremely vulnerable, as are the breast and the uterus. Now, once you have inflammation, it depends upon how much inflammation you have and what are the sources. For example, an X-ray produces a phenomenal amount of inflammation because it produces hydroxyl free radicals. It's the difference between getting a little smack on the face and someone hitting you in the jaw with a sledgehammer. The implications for the body are staggering. And even those people who can have a tumor shrink, which is not that difficult, with radiation, don't take into consideration that the shrinkage of the tumor, if it comes back, shouldn't be a therapy of choice. And frequently that's what happens. And you almost never hear about the high percentage of people who've received a lot of radiation getting secondary cancers because of the radiation of the treatment. And that's one of the reasons in a major paper that has just been finished and is out being reviewed for publication as we speak. We've sent it to some independent reviewers, and then I'll submit it to some journals. We're using only their literature and only their statistics. I literally challenge the entire cancer establishment to stop for a moment and take an honest look at what they're doing in the name of proven therapy. Well, there's nothing proven in what they're doing. And it's all experimental, with only about 12% results that are favorable, which means you've got 88% that's not. And no one ever talks about the 550,000 people who will be toe-tagged and buried this year using only orthodox therapy. Now, you start multiplying that times 20 years, and you're up between 7 and 10 million Americans have died. And yet no one questions what they're doing. That maybe all these research grants from the National Institutes of Health and the National Cancer Society, and who gets the money? And what happens when you fail? You get more money. It's one of these unique phenomena that people refuse to examine. Do we ever look at medical bureaucracies or governmental bureaucracies? The people inside are masters of controlling where the money goes, but never give you the results, but only give you promises. Keep funding us, and someday we'll come up with a miracle. It's highly political, and it forces people to come out and say, sure, we'll write you a check, because they're afraid if they're the person says, no, I'm not going to continue this. Ah, then you don't want Americans to be cured of cancer. Ah, you want women to get breast cancer. They have the Bill Raleigh phenomena. The moment you don't support the American troops, then you're for the enemy. Nothing could be further from the truth. I don't support our wars. I'm anti-war. And I will not back off that. but I am for our troops, as anyone who's seen my documentaries, including the latest one, and all the work I've done for the vets, and continue to do. So you can be against war and for the veterans who frequently are in wars because it's the only place they can make a living. Now, back to this whole idea. So here we have this prostate gland. And we're going to have about 220,000 to 250,000 new cases of prostate cancer this year. Around 30,000 men in America will die. Why? First, because almost all of the way we treat prostate is by measuring prostatic specific antigen, or PSA. That has been called into question as the ultimate tumor marker. It is not. And so when the moment people start having a 1 or a 2 or a 3 or 4, then they want to start put you on therapy. Between 4 and 10, then they're suggesting they got to put you on a more aggressive therapy. And if you're above 50, it indicates a tumor that has spread elsewhere in the body. Then implanted radiation pellets, radiation, chemotherapy. But they don't have a big success rate. And once again, you can't look at any problem by being selective in the information that you bring in to make your point and intentionally denying anything that legitimately challenges it. And that's what we do in almost all of our institutions today. We cherry-pick information. And so then when these contradictions pop up, they have no way of talking to us except to condescend or to patronize. And since the average person is not a cancer doctor or an oncologist, they can't talk in the terminology, and then they back off. And as a result, nothing changes. So I would tell you, first and foremost, if you have any bleeding or urinary retention or impotency or sepsis, which is blood poisoning, you might then have a problem with your prostate. So turn off all of the pro-inflammatory agents, all the sodas, the fructose, the artificial sweeteners. Go strictly to an alkaline cleansing and detox program. Cleanse and purify the blood. We know how to do that. We know which herbs and botanicals and which zeolites in the homeopathic field are good blood purifiers. But these are the first stage. Then you look at the foods in the cruciferous vegetables. You're taking your cruciferous vegetables every day, once or even twice a day, would be one of the single best things you could do to prevent cancer, all cancers, and if you have cancer, to fortify the body with known and proven anti-cancer agents. So cruciferous vegetables, you bet, every day, absolutely, for everybody. Then you look at the nutrients that are known to help the prostate. At the top of my list would be coenzyme A, which works with coenzyme Q10 and detoxifying. Then I would look at dimethylglycine, DMG, hyperoxygenates the blood, garlic, maybe 4 times a day, which helps to break down testosterone and has been able to slow cancer growth, proteolytic enzymes with every meal, superoxide dismutase, but getting that, to get it right, you have to really get it in injection from a physician. And then lycopene and vitamin E and B complex and vitamin C in intravenous dosage and vitamin D3 and maitake mushrooms at 48,000, 9,000 and the berry complexes. Really important because we know that berries have phytonutrients that help regulate cell function and have suppression of cancer as one of their primary. So raspberries, strawberries, blueberries, pomegranates, all your berries. Then glutathione in reduced form. That's great, along with L-cysteine and methionine, which are sulfur-containing amino acids that detoxify and protect the liver. And then L-carnitine, which protects against free radical damage and toxins. Then, of course, you can use taurine, which functions to help repair the prostate, zinc, black radish, dandelion, milk thistle, red clover, all important bucha, B-U-C-H-U, carnivore, echinacea, pau d'arco, suma, all have anti-cancer pro benefits, mainly in a tincture or in tea form. Damiana, good. Gravel root, hydrangea, oat straw, parsley, yuba ursi, yarrow. These are all important. Green tea, absolutely, because green tea has been shown at the Mayo Clinic to be a very powerful killer of prostate cancer cells. Modified citrus pectin, yes, it inhibits growth of cancer cells. And pygium and saw palmetto, also important, and as is resveratrol, which is from grapes and grape juice, and turmeric at a very high level with its active ingredient curcumin, generally 7 to 10,000 milligrams at that point, and lots of citrus. So that's what I would be offering, and so that's why anything that's new that we can add to that is just one more piece to that puzzle. And up they come with caffeic acid, the phenylethyl ester, or what's called CAPE. Now, if you were to ask me what is one of the best ways of protecting your immune system if you have a cold or flu, I would suggest bee propolis in liquid form, used with other nutrients. And generally, it's a black resin, very sticky. You want to make sure you get it down your throat, otherwise it'll stain your teeth. It's almost like drinking tar. Not the most pleasant thing, but it does a terrific job. But for all these years, every beekeeper, and I'm a beekeeper, I have 40 beehives, every beekeeper I know knows you leave the bee propolis because that also is what protects the bees. And historically, and starting with my great aunt Myrtle, I used to be with her when she would go out, and she would rarely take honey. She said, let the bees have their food. It keeps them strong. And then in turn, they pollinate all these berries and these trees, the nut trees. And she was right. And she said, I take a little bit of propolis, but just a small amount, and then I make it up into a paste. And then I add these other ingredients, and I don't know what else she added. But I saw this jar of stuff, and I remember once, or at least when I was growing up, I don't know about you, when you start to get a sore throat or a chest cold, your mom would come in and put some warm Vaseline, methylated Vaseline on your chest, and you could smell it, and it would be really warm, and it actually worked. But my Aunt Myrtle would also make you drink this foul, I mean terrible tasting concoction, but you get up the next day and be terrific. A real herbalist who lived close to nature. So they didn't have the science, but they had the insight. Now we have the science to use. So that's good news. Now also, I've been asked many times, when a person is doing laying on of hands, or a person is a sensitive, my mother was a sensitive, the only one in our extended family, going back to her grandmother, but everyone else wasn't. And I had that gift. What do you see? I never tell anyone ever what I see. Because then once they know you can tell them something, they never stop asking, well, should I do this? What do you see if I do that? And free will is the most important issue in life. You take away someone's free will, and then what have you got? And you have no idea how quickly people will cross that boundary of respecting you by not asking constant questions. And so if you are sensitive, just use your gift without telling people. And you can use it in very clever ways. One of the ways I do is, even with my own family growing up, is I would make suggestions to them with a hope that they would follow it. They never did. No one in my family ever did anything I asked them to do, ever, not once. But there's a consequence to life when we make bad choices. But there's a good consequence when we make good choices. And there's always a point where we reach a fork in the road. Do I continue doing what I'm doing with the same attitude and the same beliefs and the same values then what is the likely outcome? Even though I may not know when that outcome will come, today, next week, 5 years, 10 years from now, it's going to come. It's there waiting for you. Or do I take the other path and do I try to do everything that honors my life and others? There'll be a different outcome. And sometimes you'll hear people say that they see auras. And of course, immediately the medical establishment, scientific establishment says, well, that's quackery. There is no such thing. You can't see it. What most people don't know is that for 30 years, while I was doing cutting-edge anti-aging research, calorie restriction research at the Institute of Applied Biology, that full 30 years I was doing psi research or energy research, over 140 different experiments, major experiments. When there was a best-selling book on pyramid power, I duplicated all those pyramids in miniature, and every single test I did failed. So I had to question how legitimate were the claims they were making. And then I found out they weren't. That doesn't mean that there wasn't something that could happen, but not based upon the claims they were making. And then when I finally had a chance once, when I was in Arizona, and I had finished a major lecture, I ran into the author of one of these popular selling books. And it was at a social event, and I simply walked over and I asked this person, I said, could you please answer a question for me? The person said, sure. I said, do you have any solid proof for all the claims that are in your book? He said, yeah. I said, could you share those with me? Because when I looked in the book, I didn't see actual references that corresponded to any proof other than someone telling you something. And where that may or may not have been true, and I'm certainly not discounting what someone says, I want to see if it can be duplicated. Because one of the basis of science is that something happens and doesn't just happen to one single person. It'd be like saying, I help one person overcome the cold with this protocol, so therefore it would benefit everyone. Not necessarily. But what if you helped 100 or 1,000 people, and what if others took your protocol and they in turn helped thousands of people, and then they in turn helped people? Then you have something you can fairly well say. It's not just an isolated example. There was a whole lot of background, and our basic rule in the lab was you had to do an experiment 6 times. For example, when I wanted to see about psi healing, and why did I do this at all? It was very simple. Because I saw what happened when my mother put her hands on people's heads growing up. I was watching upstairs. I'd sneak down and look through the banister. And every evening, 7 nights a week, my mom from about 7 o'clock after dinner till about 10 o'clock, people would come quietly. She never charged anyone. She said, never charge for this gift or you won't have it. But she would do this. She wouldn't tell a person a thing. She'd just smile, or she would hold their hands. And it was only at my mother's funeral that I couldn't believe how many people came to the funeral. It was probably, if not the largest funeral in our town's history, certainly one of them. And what happened was so many people came over and were talking about the stories of Blandina. That was my mother's name. The healings that happened after she was with him, even though she never said a word. And it was this energy. So that puzzled me. So I just wanted to see, was there a way that other people had this? I'm sure there were. But how would we know? So I put the word out that I was going to do a research project. And for this project, I needed people who believed that they could help people with cancer. For whatever way. And I was inundated. In fact, it took me over a year of screening people to find 50 people who I believed had enough evidence from people giving them letters, and I'd read the letters, to even put them in this experiment. But then I wasn't using people. I wanted something that wouldn't be influenced by charisma or theater or placebo. Specially bred rats that I was borrowing from downstairs in their cancer department and taking upstairs. And if you go up on my website, garynoll.com, and go under photos, you'll see these people doing these experiments back then. I'm so glad I took pictures of him, because who's one of the people you see? Rabbi Abraham Wiseman. And he was a rabbi known for healing hands-on. There was Dr. Dolores Krieger. You'll see her there. And you'll see her holding the little container with a mouse in it, mouse number 37. You'll see Dr. Morton Jacobs and Dr. Thomas Kruth. And in England, there was an absentee healer, because the thought was, if you can heal someone or something or influence the energy transfer in this moment, then where is it written that energy is limited to distance and time? So I started with the hypothesis that we are all interconnected. Our conditioning and not living an authentic energy and allowing that authentic energy to vibrate then disconnects that energy. But there's no stronger energy than a mother when she is vibrating in the same rhythm as the baby. That energy is, especially if there's love and no fear, if there was no desire for abort, if there was no disdain for the child, if there was unconditional love, that is one of the highest vibrations. And that's why mothers are so intuitive. They are all sensitive. And once you understand how sensitive people can be, now there are levels of this, but everyone has intuition. Whether we use it or not is a different matter. So what I found is that after the first experiment, Harry Edwards, who was a famous healer, the most famous healer in English history, he headed the Spiritual Association of Great Britain. And I saw what he did. And I thank goodness I hired a BBC freelance cinematographer to go around with me that week and film everyone. But Dr. Christopher Woodard, Dr. Anne Willie Hart, Dr. Jacobs of the Royal Society, they all claimed to have this gift. None of them could work with the man I brought with me. They didn't know what he had. I didn't tell them. They didn't know which person had this condition. In other words, I wanted to give them no basis for speculation. But I took a person who had five independent medical examinations, whose condition could not be reversed, and they all signed on that, who had all the x-rays and top test. And so there were a group of about eight of us, because I took a group of scientists with me. And I went for a whole week, and I never will forget, we had one more place to go. And I remember Michael, the guy, the subject, I see him at the elevator with his bag. I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "This is all nonsense. This is quackery. This is stupid. I don't know how I allowed myself. My sisters and doctor told me, you know, to try this. I shouldn't have. I don't like any of this. And I'm going home." I said, "We only have one more day, just one more person." I said, "So why not just wait for tomorrow?" Well, it turns out he didn't want to wait for tomorrow, but he missed his flight. So as a result, he came with us, and he was angry and negative. But he was angry and negative in any case. We went up to this beautiful valley, and there was this old manor, I'm guessing several hundred years old, and it was a rainy day, and we went inside, and we set up the camera, and I asked, "Where's Harry Edwards?" And, "Oh, he's not here right now." So no one was ever told who was the subject. And then I said, "Look, I don't know where this guy is or where he's going to come in. Just roll the camera, all right?" So the camera was rolling, and very quietly, in comes this man, white-haired man, and he comes over behind Michael. Michael's sitting, standing, looking out a window. And as he takes his hand, and I'm 3 feet away, as he takes his hand down Michael's back, but not touching the back, suddenly Michael's whole body begins to wreathe and jerk, and you could hear cracking motions. And it only took 15 seconds. And then he turns and he leaves. And I thought, whoa, it was Michael was then, and Michael had to wear a brace. Michael's condition was that he had been in an accident swimming when he was 16, and he had degeneration of the spine, and he was in a brace, and he couldn't tie shoes, he couldn't exercise, he couldn't bend over. He was in excruciating pain. He was on pain meds all the time, and his condition was progressively worse, and all the doctors said that it wouldn't get any better. And he'd ultimately be in a wheelchair. And Harry Edwards says, go down and touch your toes. Michael said, I can't do it. He says, yes, you can. So Michael started to bend down. Not only did he touch his toes, he did push-ups, sit-ups. You can't imagine all that happened. By the way, he went on to become a really fast runner. In fact, he and I would race together, and he won many races. And I was a top four, bottom 5 mile runner, and he was right there. And his whole personality changed. His energy changed. But nobody could figure out how he did it. It was only when I was sitting with my editor and I was taking it frame by frame that I came to where he muttered, and I had to get a sound expert to tweak the sound. And here's Harry Edwards saying, I've healed the spirit. Now let the body follow. And I wouldn't have seen that. I wouldn't have heard that had I not picked that out. Because a month after Michael got back, he had the same five doctors examine him. They took x-rays. Not a single thing had changed. But something had changed. He was a different person. He could do things he hadn't done. And the doctor says, look, here's the x-rays. Nothing's changed. So he might have had a temporary remission because of placebo effect or wishful thinking. So I said, well, how is it this guy doesn't know who we're working on, but only goes to Michael and no one else in the room? How is it that he doesn't touch Michael and Michael's looking out the window and he takes his hand down behind Michael's back but doesn't touch him, and Michael's body starts doing this wreathing and cracking? Oh, and they tried to blow it off as mumbo jumbo. A year later, x-rays show he was totally healed. During that period of time, Michael's personality completely changed. He became a very positive, joyful, happy person. It taught me something. Now, back in the lab, the first round, 6 of the 50 healers were able to actually cause the shrinkage of the tumor mass in the mice. Over the next year, we did it 5 more times. And then I had him doing the energy on sprouts, and suddenly the sprouts they were working on and time-lapse photography grew faster. All these different things we gave him. So what I saw was that indeed energy exists, and indeed absentee energy can work, because Harry Edwards' mice were cured. And all Harry got was a picture of the mice and a number. Each time we sent the pictures with different mice, his were cured. But what was interesting is one of the women in the study, an unusual phenomenon happened. I was generally there at night. And during the daytime, when the people would come in, there would be lab technicians who would monitor them to make sure there was no touching of the actual animal. And every time for almost 2 weeks, lab assistants and technicians and monitors would call in sick. So there was no one there. So I asked the woman, can you come in at 8 o'clock at night? Because I have no one there in the daytime to monitor you. She's sure. But also importantly, for 4 days in a row, her mice died. So first you think bacterial contamination, viral contamination. You know, it happens. So I'm sitting there, and she starts. She's given the little environment with the cage with the animal. And immediately, I felt this pulsing sensation. I felt an energy field. And I said, hold on a second. I said, what are you thinking? She said, I'm helping the animal. I said, what are you thinking? What thoughts? And she said, I want to stop the animal suffering. So I'm trying to heal it. I said, you're wanting to stop its suffering, but the energy you're giving the animal is actually killing them. And that's why all these lab technicians, when I later talked to them, they all said the same thing. They were fine until she came in, then they got these excruciating headaches, and they couldn't sleep. Now, that taught me another lesson. Now, I've distracted myself for a moment here. hope this you find this interesting, because I believe it can be applied to other things in life. Some people, even with the best of intents, can put the wrong energy, jealousy, the wrong energy, greed, the wrong energy, selfishness, the wrong energy, self-obsession, the wrong energy, fear of loss, the wrong energy. And as a result, the energy they put into a person, a group, or their work ends up self-defeating it. And that has been something I've studied very carefully. So anyhow, I did all this work, and I did some really unusual studies, studies that are so far out there I won't even talk about them, because I don't think many people in this audience would appreciate how powerful energy is. And but at the basis of everything in life is the exchange of energy. And now it's simplified. Exchange negative energy for positive energy. So you eat a good meal instead of a bad meal. You say something kind instead of something hurtful. You respect boundaries, you don't cross boundaries. You write positive things, not negative things. Stop looking at yourself as a victim that justifies your anger, and instead look at yourself as blessed and gifted for the moments you have in life, whatever they may be. Instead of looking at life and yourself as a victim, and therefore surrounding yourself with the story, making up the story, lying in the story, that everything is someone else's responsibility and fault, not yours. Because that energy is a deadly energy, and it creates a toxic reaction and changes the vibration of the energy you put into another person. And energy can be sent anywhere. There is no limit in energy. Anyhow, that's a separate issue. So why do I talk about all this? Because this is from the University of Granada. Quote, and this is published in the peer-reviewed, very prestigious journal, and this was done at the University of Granada Department of Experimental Psychology, the peer-reviewed journal Consciousness and Cognition. Quote, scientific evidence proves why healers see the aura of people. Quote from the study, University of Granada researchers affirm that healers present a neuropsychological phenomena involving a mingling of the senses. The results of this study have been published in the prestigious journal Consciousness and Cognition. The authors remark the significant effect that healers have on ill people. How about that? There's a term that is called synthesis, to talk about a higher prevalence of this phenomena among certain people. And this is what separates out intuition from actual healing. So if you've ever been not to one of these, you know, get in line at a health conference and get one of these people to say, oh, you know, for $5 I'll read your aura, but legitimate people who have a gift and simply share it. Well, for those who discouraged, denigrated, debased, they were wrong. It's now been scientifically proven. How about that? Now, I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to come back in a moment and take your calls on any of the topics that you find important. And by the way, yoga has been shown to help prevent adolescent mental problems. So yoga should be encouraged for younger people. And this is from an article entitled Benefits of Yoga for Psychological Well-Being in U.S. High School Curriculum, Preliminary Randomized Controlled Trial. And it was published in the Journal of Developmental Behavior Pediatrics, a major peer-reviewed journal. And here's what it says. Quote, high school students who do yoga may derive psychological benefits. This was done at Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School. And they just reported it in this peer-reviewed journal. And so that's good. This was done in 11th and 12th year olds. Then they're less likely to be violent. They're less likely to be bullies. They're much more sensitive. So yoga is not only good physically, but it's also good psychologically and can help a person with their energy of the mind. Always try to give you stuff that is important, but not in the mainstream. Back in a moment with your calls at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Knoll. No guest today, just your thoughts. Give us a call now. If you miss a program, by all means, go to our website and download it. In fact, 90% of all the people who listen to this program listen over the Internet by downloading a show. Also, we have a really important service. For those of you who may not have an Internet, may not be around a land-based station, you can phone a number and listen to this program wherever you're at in America and Canada. That number, write this down, 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066. And we'd like to thank all the people who've listened in the last 2 months, according to the service that offers this, of the 400 and some stations around the world in some 40 countries. This program has the most downloads of anyone in the world, or most listened live. So, another resource to help people. Ed. Hi, Ed. Your turn. Are you there, Ed? No? Okay. Then let's go over and say hello to Luann Panessi. Luann is a holistic nurse, a former oncological nurse, emergency room nurse, a nurse administrator, overseeing over 90 different nurses at Long Island Jewish Hospital for 18 years, so she was in the belly of the beast. But today, through her own transformative processes and her awareness, she's realigned her energy and revibrated that energy into helping people, counseling them through holistic health techniques. And she's on the line now. She is subbing in for Elizabeth, who is on a sabbatical, taking advantage of an educational opportunity back in England for a short period of time, and she'll be back in about a month. Hi, Luann.
Hi, Gary. I've gotten so many wonderful mail entries from your audience. Very exciting stuff, though. At 5 o'clock this afternoon, I received an email from someone who apparently had seen you do a race today. And the interesting thing about this was that he was riding his bicycle with a friend, as many people do in Florida, and he passed by the track where you were, you know, doing the race. And the guy said to his friend, "I think that's Gary Null." And his friend looked over and he says, no, that can't be Gary Null. Gary Null raced with my father over 30 years ago, so that couldn't be Gary Null. He says, my father aged and died, you know, a few years ago, and he died and was very aged looking, and that doesn't look like Gary. It looks like Gary Null, but how could it be if he looks the same as he did 30 years ago? Well, curiosity got them, and they moved in closer and closer, and son of a gun, it was you. So I just found that very interesting that they said, gee, you know, can that really be Gary Null? And, you know, I know that people have commented on how young you look, and a lot of people, if you knew how many emails came to me asking, please tell me how old Gary Null is. So I just tell them spiritually he's 117, and biologically he's 28. They shouldn't be interested in your chronological age. However, be that as it may, people were these two guys were absolutely stunned to see. And then what one of them said they did was they went up to the website and they looked at photos of you from years ago, and they were stunned at how close you look now to how you look then. So to me, that's not as much of a surprise. I've been working now for 16 years with your protocols and helping people to kind of take their health back, reverse chronic illnesses, reverse things like menopause, all of the different chronic illnesses that conventional medicine can't touch. And when people actually do the protocols, and I work with people for a full year. You have me for an entire year when you work with me. I see amazing results. I see things that when I was in the hospital, for instance, if someone had diabetes or heart disease or cancer or fibromyalgia or Parkinson's disease, it was essentially an opportunity for us to give them synthetic drugs, and they would go home and stabilize until a new symptom came up for which we gave them more drugs or higher steroids, and then they sent home, and then they come back again, and they just got progressively worse till we ended up placing them in a nursing home where they spent their final days. And that was pretty much it. So once you got a diagnosis of a chronic illness, essentially, you, if you believed what the doctor said and followed their regimen, that was your path. When I work with people now that have chronic illnesses and they change fundamental lifestyle daily habits, it's just choices. It's where you put your attention and the whole art of self-discipline. And that's a big hole in many of the protocols that I see out there. They don't help people understand the fine art of self-discipline and where are you putting your attention. I see people taking and just, I just got a letter the other day that someone had, she had very bad osteoporosis, and she says she got a totally normal bone density test. Came to me with Crohn's disease. Year and a half later, she says, I'm happy to say for the first time in my life, I have no Crohn's disease. All tissue diagnostics. And it's so refreshing to have that occur with people. For me to witness this after 18 years working as a nurse administrator in adult medicine, watching people go through the same routine, I know the drill. And cancer was probably the most devastating, watching people come in and just deteriorate so rapidly from chemotherapy and radiation and over and over and over again. And you can't sue the doctor if he tells you to have radiation and surgery, you know, for malpractice when you have radiation poisoning and die. You know, so this is all they had in their bag of tricks. Now, not only do I see people reversing chronic conditions, but it's almost like, it's not almost, it is. They actually slow down the aging process so much that you'd think they were much younger. I've had people look at me, and there's a picture of me on my website, metropolitanwellness.com, and it was only taken a couple of months ago. And people think I'm much younger than I actually am, and I don't even think about it. I live a healthy lifestyle. It's all about attention and self-discipline and balance and your daily habits and your relationships and your attitude. It's all the things that you talk about in major depth on all of your shows. These people are walking around now completely looking much younger than they did if they have a chronic illness. Chronic illness, like any inflammation in the body or chronic infections, it just ages you. Not only that, being unhappy, being pessimistic, it just ages you prematurely. But you see, if everybody else is aging prematurely, when the abnormal becomes common, we accept it as normal. So we think everybody gets arthritis by the time they're 65 years old. It doesn't have to be that way. So I happen to be in a very unique position to watch people who can actually stop or reverse their aging process in addition to healing themselves from the chronic imbalances that they experience from old beliefs that they thought were good for them. Our parents did the best they could with the crappy tools they had, and they told us to eat meat and dairy, and they treated us with ice cream when we had a sore throat. They didn't know any better, And we looked up to them, so we said, okay. And over time, we get hardwired, and we think, how could I eat without having a piece of meat on my dish? And I see people that I work with, and I'm going to tell you, many of them don't follow through, and they don't do the protocols. And they come back 3, 4, 5 years later, and they say, I want to start again because I did a little of this, a little of that. I tried that. Well, you know, I didn't like that. So instead of getting creative and making things work for them, their conditioned mind say, this is too confusing. This is too overwhelming. Who can do this? I don't have the time. I don't have the money. And they hide back in their box of victimhood, and they say, I can't do this. So they go back to the old habits. They get sicker and sicker. It's only when you make those positive changes that you really see a big difference. So I thought this was a great little piece that this person wrote about the fact that they didn't think it was you. And I don't know if you want to share with the audience what your experience was in the race, but I'm going to put money down that you probably took a medal home because I trained with you.
I did not take a medal home. I won a gold medal, but I chose not to take it home because the medal doesn't mean anything. I don't stay for the award ceremony. I'm there to challenge myself. And that's why I hope other people continue to be motivated to get out there and race, whether you're in California, wherever you are, because I will fly in, do a race, and fly right back out again. And that's what almost always I do in the same day. But what I do is, we have to get out of shape intentionally. It never happens by accident. And we have to get in shape intentionally. It won't happen otherwise. So it is the intent of whether you choose a positive outcome or a negative outcome. There's only going to be positive or negative by degrees. It's like the person says, I'm going to be healthy, but not too healthy. I mean, don't go crazy on me. Okay? And what's it mean when you want to be sick? I don't want to be too sick, but, you know, a little sickness is okay. I mean, you know, everybody's going to be overweight and have some pain and lose some of their memory and all that. I can handle that. Because when we do not think through the choices we make, there is ultimately an outcome that we will never be able to control. And by the time the person says, I'm divorcing you, or I don't want you in my life anymore, that's the end stage of disconnect, not the beginning. And it's no different than what French fry in your life will cause your arteries to finally clog, what alcohol will cause your cirrhosis of the liver, what cigarette will cause the lung cancer. Suddenly, people are surprised when something tips in their body. No different than if it tips in our personal life or in our economic well-being. It doesn't just happen. It accumulates. It's much like the people who know that they're in a danger zone and refuse to leave, and then one day the tsunami hits or the earthquake hits or, you know, a flooding hits, and they think, why did it happen? Well, was it possible to happen? Yes. Were you aware that it could happen? Yes. And what exactly did you do to prepare for it? Nothing. When people have that mindset, then they're expecting that there'll be no such thing as cause and effect. And those are the people who are going to argue most arduously that there's an unfairness in the world, in their relationships, or whatever it is. And that's where they start writing the story of being a victim. Or you can take that other path and say, what do I want the outcome to be? If you want to be healthy and strong, then you have to, with intent and discipline and focus, you have to work on it. And if you do, there's every probability that when others are your same age, you're not going to look like them. You're going to look like a son or daughter. And they'll either, A, become very resentful, because we tend to be resentful of other people doing things that we could have, should have, and didn't. Or we take note of it, appreciate what someone else is, because when we look in the mirror, what do we want to see in return? We want to see the image of the illusion of who we think we are based upon what life we've mastered. We don't want to see what we've become. We don't like being decrepit. We don't like being wrinkled. We don't like all the things that can happen to us when we don't take control over our lives. Who was it? T.S. Eliot, the great writer, said, "The young feel tired at the beginning of an action, and the old at the end of an action, the old at the beginning of an action." That doesn't happen. That doesn't have to happen. And as long as there are those who want to be as healthy as they can be for the age, chronological age they are, then there's every reasonable expectation that in 2 to 3 years, you will be a younger biological person. And part of what I've done my entire life is show people that the tools are there, but what they, if they use them or not, it's their business. I must respect the boundaries that are there, that you can't force anyone to do what's in their best interest. All you can do is present them with the evidence that exists that there is a better choice and hope that they take it. So, yes, I did a race today. I came in late last night, did a race, and I was gone 7 minutes after the race. In fact, the race director came over and says, "You leaving?" I said, "I got to go. I got filming to do tomorrow in a long off place. Don't have time." So I'll do this next year around the United States. I'll probably do another 10 races. Why? To compete against myself. I never compete against another athlete. Because the day that I wake up in the morning and I choose not to honor my body or not to honor my mind, and all you have to do is not honor part of yourself, it automatically affects all the other parts. So think of the people that master their instrument and don't master their life. Master their career. Master their personality. Master what gives them income and resource, but don't master happiness. Then what is the point of what they've gained? So I just look at it a little differently. I just believe that life is simple, truths are simple, and everything else is complicated, confusing, torturous, because of our conditioned response to that which is truthful. If you can't handle the truth, watch how quickly you turn to the chapter in your life that says, confusion, don't understand it, too complicated, not interesting, boring, don't want to hear it, surely someone will protect us, there's got to be a drug, I don't have to worry about that, by the time I get sick from what I'm doing, they'll have a cure. You think? Remember Christopher Walken at the end of the Deer Hunter movie, sitting in a Saigon bar, having people bet whether or not his game of Russian roulette would get his brains on the wall or a pocket full of money. And that's what we do when we give our responsibility for the choices we make over to the chapter of our conditioned self. The worst enemy you ever have is yourself. The best friend is yourself. You can't have both simultaneously. You can't live a dualistic life, being happy and sad, kind and unkind. And the worst of all is people who tell you they love you. At the same time, they're writing you toxic, hate-filled letters or leaving messages or looking at the worst they can say about you to disempower you. That doesn't ever, ever, not in one single time, come from love. If you say something hateful, that comes from hate. That's purely the dark side speaking. You can justify it, rationalize it, excuse it, deny it, but you are what you share. You are what you do. And if people actually looked at what they did, what they shared, what they said, then you'd have an awful lot of people no different than Mel Gibson and other people who were caught saying things that the rest of the people think or say without being held accountable. Hope that answers that issue.
It sure does.
And if people want to see what it is to train, I have a video up on my website. I don't know what this is called. Gary Nall training or Gary Nall getting in shape, something like that. And that was about 2 years ago. And I keep myself in shape because I want to honor my life, not to impress anyone else. Thank you, Luann.
Okay.
We've had some engineering problems, and I wasn't able to get your calls from our engineer. Sorry. We'll do better on the next show when we get our technical issues fixed. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for taking your time to listen. I appreciate it. Have a nice day.